Session number 9955, reel number 12.
Reel 12. I believe round about the 1st of September 1916 you heard that you were about to go into the attack, or that the division was anyway.
Yes.
How did you hear that?
Just casually passed along the ranks, sort of thing. One chap brought it from the company runner, and that's how you got the information.
How did you feel? Like this would be the first time we'd been in an attack, wouldn't it?
Yes. Well, I think we were eager to see what we could do. We'd done the other part, kept going in and out, so we thought this time we could have a show on our own and see what happened.
Now, in the days leading up to it, I believe you saw some of the early tanks.
Yes. They were on the roadside, covered with tarpaulin sheets. You could see nothing except a square outline, and there was two or three around it guarding it. And when we asked what it was, the simple reply was tanks. We naturally assumed water tanks, and with no reason to think otherwise. It was one of the best kept secrets, I think, on that front. Knowing the shortage of water, we thought they were getting reserve supplies to make sure there was adequate supplies, and that was accepted by all, I believe.
Were there any other signs of preparation for this attack?
There were cavalry divisions massed in the rear waiting for a breakthrough. And we knew then that it must be a very big attack if you had two cavalry divisions waiting.
What did you think of the cavalry? Did you have a view about them?
Yes. There were no use against machine guns and wire. Open country where there were nothing like that, yes, but to be used to go over the top as actual attack, we didn't think it would work out, owing to the obstructions and entanglement.
Were you envious at all of their quiet life? They had a relatively quiet life compared to the infantry.
No.
Now, on the 9th, I think you went into the line round about the Trones Wood area.
Yes.
That this is what we mentioned earlier. Mm. And you were shelled out of there.
That's correct, yes.
How long were you in that area, roughly?
24 hours. We lost a few men, and there'd been another attack, and we saw hundreds of our chaps returning wounded from an attack. And we thought the best thing the authority did was to have moved us from where the shelling was, because it was the road they were after as well, but they were dropping in the wood. Which
you were acting as support, were you, to this attack?
Yes, we're in reserve, if needed.
Did you have to do anything?
No.
You mentioned earlier that one time you would open aim fire was during a German attack. Were there any German attacks on your part of the line at this time?
None that we knew of. It was all defensive, making us pay the penalty for every yard they gave up.
So they weren't attacking themselves?
Very rare.
Now, where did you go after you'd pulled back from Trones Wood, the Trones Wood sector?
Went in some other trenches away. And we're preparing to go into the line to take over from another division.
Did you pull back into Happy Valley at this time? As it was
yes,
called?
That was the place I think we went to. Why they call it Happy Valley, I don't know, because he came over every night and dropped bombs on the horses, transport lines. And we were glad to move away onto the screaming of the horses who were injured. Were a shocking area to be in. That's the first time I ever saw one of our men tied to the wheel of a general service wagon. I don't know what his offence was, but as we were marching past, he was there in full view, in the sun, shine too, daylight.
What did you think of that method of punishment?
Pretty crude, to be in view of everybody who was on that road. There was, I think there was a Lance Corporal close by. He was just tied.
Spread eagle. Was that method of punishment not used in your battalion then?
I never heard of it, but I think it mainly applied to military offences like asleep on sentry in the back area or refusing to obey an NCO's legal order. Minor military attempting to strike officer or an NCO, something similar, and that was generally the punishment.
Now, on the 15th of September, your battalion was in reserve in a big attack. What do you remember about that day?
Well, about 200 yards away, as soon as it became daylight, we saw this tank then moving forward, and it had a like a load of wood stuff on the top, like a rolled up ball of wood. And it got to the line we were in, broke down, and the German guns were turned onto it, and it was a very hot spot for a time. But we heard later that the artillery observers had dug underneath it and were using it as an observation post to direct the battery fire onto the German positions.
This was your first view of tanks in action?
That was the first time I saw a tank in action.
What was your first impression of it?
Well, would it face shells? Would it be capable of standing a direct hit with a shell? And it was the talk for quite a time that it hadn't succeeded. I think we, on the divisional front, there were five tanks allotted. I think one got through and four broke down. I think that was the general conversation. That the machinery, engines or some of the tracks were not just up to the mark, and that if they came against anything which was solid, the track was apt to be torn off. The grip, apparently.
So you weren't terribly impressed overall?
No.
What happened in that day then? What did happen to your battalion? You were in reserve. Were you called upon at all?
No. Later, according to information we received, was the objective had been reached, but communications had broken down. There were crude communications in those days. It was a field telephone or a chap with a board, black and white, and he had a string and he used to give a message through some way, I don't know what it was, and he could send a message. But the evil was he had to stand on top of a trench to do it, and as soon as he got up he was shot down. And they couldn't get a runner back. And the result was that the cavalry were not called upon to go forward. They'd got there, but it was too late to do anything regarding it. I think that was the source of a lot of attacks. You got your objective, but your communications had gone. And you couldn't get going until it was dark, when it was too late. The Germans had reinforced, and that was it.
And this attack was in the Ginchy area?
Yes. towards Les Buffs or that other little village that was there.
Did you move forward after the leading battalions, or did you just stay where you were?
I went forward a little way, following the Scots Guards. But we weren't called upon. We were the reserve brigades to carry out any reinforcement, but we weren't called upon. So we held that line in reserve, then went out for a day or two, and then got ready for the big attack on the 15th of September.
I thought that was the 15th of September attack.
No, 25th, sorry. For the 25th. Went out from about the 17th, reorganised and prepared for this attack. There again.
You were this time, you were going to be the attack troops, were you?
We were the frontline attack.
Was there any special preparation or instructions given to you before such an attack?
Only to make sure you had no letters on you. Nothing which would be of any use to the Germans if you were captured, and just make sure that you kept going and never stopped to see what had happened to your pal who was next to you, whether he dropped down, and keep going, get to the objective. And that was the orders we had.
So what can you remember from the start of the 25th of September then? The morning.
We were in the front line the day before, and the attack was about 5 minutes past 12, I think, somewhere about that time. And we were already at 10 o'clock waiting to go over, and they promised a good artillery bombardment. And everybody was ready and prompt at the time. Over we went.
During this, that was a 2 hour wait.
Yes.
What was the atmosphere like in the trench?
Sat talking and smoking and making sure all your equipment was ready to be used, and everybody was in line, and you knew who your corporal was, or sergeant, and officer. If you were near, you had to follow, and they knew where we were going, and you were actually kept up with them.
So what happened when the time came?
Well, whistle went, and over the, we all were out of the trench, and there were no barbed wire at front.
Did you use ladders to get out of the trench?
No, we climbed out. We got on the firing stop and just got out. If you had, I never saw any ladders used in the attack I was in. And we met the usual machine gun fire, and
did that start almost straight away?
Yes. You see, the mistake to me was blowing a whistle for the attack. Another way could have been found, which probably was silent. As soon as the whistle went, the Germans must have known the attack was on its way, and they were ready. Then I got by a German trench, and it.
What can you remember about going across No Man's Land? Did it leave anything in?
No, just looking at the, it was a green field. It was green. Very nice. And you could see the ridge, the Fleurs, the village of Fleurs, just on the top. And on the right was that well-known redoubt. Hollerland? I don't know.
Hohenzollern?
Was that there was one there, and it had, when it was taken a day or two afterwards, there was 8 machine guns in that. Well, we were getting fire from that across.
That, the quadrilateral?
Yes, the one, that's the one, quadrilateral. We were getting the machine gun fire from there because the attacking troops couldn't get near to hold it.
How heavy was the, was it just machine gun fire?
Yes, and some artillery shells, and we had to bomb the Germans out of one position, and when I passed it, they were piled up. Our bombs had done a lot of work there.
Did you have to get through the German barbed? Did the Germans have barbed wire up?
No, there were no barbed wire hardly. Very little. You see, it was a constant attacking area and they hadn't time, really. So...
Were you involved in the bombing out of the German trench?
No, I was just a few yards away from where the bombers were throwing the bombs.
Was that a special job, bombing during an attack?
Yes, we had some men who were trained as... they were good throwers and strong men, and they could land a bomb farther than what... such as I could. And
would you have bombs with you in an attack?
Yes, I carried two or three with you, and an extra bandolier of 303 ammunition. You had your food, of course, in case you got there, you could stop two or three days in the line and hold it. Sometimes you carried a sandbag or two, I think. And
were you suffering many casualties?
Yes, we were losing a few, and the section corporal had wasn't far away from me when he was hit in the arm, I think, and it was his right arm, I think, it dropped. It must have been in here somewhere. And he said to me, he said, keep going. He said, I've got a blight. He said, I'm no good, I'll have to go back. So he set off walking. Apparently, usual thing, there were snipers waiting and they got him on his way back. He was killed. I got to know a few weeks after he was being killed on his way out. We got near to the trench when I got mixed up with some German bombers, I think.
So this is the front line trench?
Front line trench. I didn't get into it. Close to it, but... these bombs came fast and furious amongst us, and I was along with one or two more who caught the nasty side effects of them. Mainly in the shoulder, shrapnel and all that, the shoulder.
Your right shoulder.
Mm. And I couldn't use a rifle. I knew I was no good. So I did what was usual. I dropped my equipment and rifle to be used in case it were necessary as a reserve, and anything they wanted out of the pack, which was the general thing to do. And I set off back and got back all right.
Were you in a lot of pain or...?
Like a dull feeling, like a dullness in your arm, and that, and your fingers were inclined to be a bit stiff. I think it was in muscle part probably had been interfered with. Got back to the first aid post and put in an ambulance.
Did they treat you at all at the first aid post?
No, there were too many. They only treated those who were needed, say the part of the leg were missing or hand or something where there was a lot of bleeding. If there wasn't a lot of bleeding and you could manage it, they told you to get going quick as you could, because there were more vital things to attend to than just ordinary flesh wounds. And I got to some hospital eventually, on the coast, I think it was.
Is that at Dan's Camier? I don't know how you pronounce it.
Camier's.
Camier,
I think it was. Yes, got there and it was absolutely overflowing with casualties. Could hardly cope with them. Each hospital was the same. They weren't coming in hundreds, I suppose. They were coming in thousands. And because there was attack as well, further along the line there was other attacks taking place. And went before the medical doctors and just looked and looked and marked you back to England, out of the way.
That's a blighty wound. Was that something you'd looked forward to, a blighty wound? Or?
No, I never thought I were going to be wounded, to be candid. Had that confidence, apparently. and landed at Dover.
Did you feel you'd been given proper medical treatment so far?
Yes, you were attended to on the hospital ship, whatever were necessary. They had the full staff there, operating theatre. They'd everything. You were well looked on the hospital train if you were serious. They had you in a coach where they could attend to you in the proper manner.
So you felt that despite the large number of casualties, you still got the proper treatment you needed?
I think the RAMC were tops, in my opinion. They couldn't have done any more. And they took the brunt of going right up and carrying out wounded when necessary. They didn't shrink going onto the actual fighting area. So as far as fighting men were concerned, the RAMC were exceptionally good people. Couldn't do anything for you apart from making it as easy as possible, and of course they couldn't undress you and bath you or anything like that, which we needed, and delouse you, and that had to be done later. And for Zachary, it was outside Liverpool, it was a big mental place, and there that was absolutely full, and we were in tents, big marquee tents.
How was your wound progressing? Was it? It doesn't sound like it was terribly serious. But
no, it was beginning to look, according to what I could see, it was beginning to look all right. It wasn't festering or anything like that. It must have been clean stuff what hit me. And I just went every two or three days for a medical examination, and the nurses looked after you.
Did you get any visitors, either ones you knew or didn't know, while you were at Fazakerley?
No, I didn't get any visitors from home. I got two or three people came to visit a young man, but he was so seriously ill they could only just have a look at him, and they had to go, and they sat talking to me in the ground. There were Canadians, Australians, there were all those there. And after a few weeks, I was discharged to go to the convalescent camp, which was outside Brighton, Seaford, I think it was.
And this was a guards convalescent?
Just for the guards division. And there was all regiments there, from the guards, the five regiments, and life guards, horse guards, and we used to set off. It was a proper camp, but the food was good.
What sort of duties and daily routine were you on there?
We did no duties whatsoever. We were just marched and given various exercises to make us fit again for active service. Used to go for 5 or 6 mile march out of Seaford along the roads, country roads, and around there.
Do you think they were pressing you to get fit too quickly, or was that about right for you and the rest of the men there?
Well, everybody seemed to enjoy it. You weren't up at 6 o'clock in the morning or anything like that, and you could enjoy yourself in the camp, but I don't think we were allowed out into the town.
So you weren't being rushed?
No. No, it was done steady. You had your own NCOs who were same as you on the convalescent treatment, and they looked after you. Formed you on parade and you marched in your regiment. Then there was one episode there which was a nasty one as far as I could understand it. They brought in a contingent of non-combatant corps men. They were conscientious objectors who would not bear arms but would wear uniform. And they put them into a tent for an hour or two while they sorted out, and then they got them into a barrack type of hut. There'd probably be 25 of them, not many. And they'd refused to load ammunition at New Haven, which wasn't far from Brighton at that time, if I remember right. They refused to load it, so they just rounded them up and sent them into this camp, waiting, I suppose, military trial for some discipline offence. But as soon as it got round the camp, who they were, when they were carrying the tea in the big canteens to them and giving them food, they were throwing dirt into the tea and generally upsetting things, and then later on there was all the windows were smashed in and they had to put a guard round them, and they took them away next morning first thing.
How did you feel about that? Did you join in, or what did you think of it?
I didn't join in. I thought it was rather, looking back at the time, I thought, well, it's rather peculiar to put men who refused to fight amongst those who had been wounded in the fighting. That was the general opinion. It was a silly thing to do, so who the authority were to do it, I don't know.
What, you thought it might have been deliberate?
It's hard to say. I don't know what the end was, but they were taken away, the ones in the camp, 24 hours. They had to go, otherwise it'd have been another. I think they'd have manhandled them later that day. The feeling was so great against it.
And at the time, did you share in that feeling against them? That's, well, then, not now.
We all had that feeling, yes, that conscientious objectors were a lot of men apart from the normal men.
In what way?
Well, they refused to defend the country. They used to ask, the question used to be asked at one time, if the Germans landed and you had a daughter, or you had a sister or your wife, and the Germans attacked her, what would you do? Well, I don't know the answers what were given, but that used to be the stock question, what were put to some of these people if you saw them about. Of course, the biggest part were Quakers, who are, of course, brought up to non-violence. But it was a nasty episode in my mind.
Did you think it was nasty then, or is that now you think that?
I think at the time it wasn't the thing we should have done. I say we, but I didn't take any active part. I went and looked at the hut, but I didn't throw a stone or interfere with the food. So
even at the time, you were a bit ambivalent about the way they were treated. You didn't approve of conscientious objectors, but you didn't think that should be done. Would that be fair?
No, I didn't think it was just fair. I mean, we wouldn't do it to a German prisoner who we'd more against. We wouldn't do it to a German. So why do it to your own people?
And you thought that at the time?
That was the opinion I came to after listening to the chaps talking in the barrack room, that some thought it was the best thing and some thought it was not just playing the game to interfere with food from men who probably needed it.
So there was a bit of discussion about the rights and wrongs,
yes,
that were going,
yes,
on.
Yes, there was. Yes, there was a corporal borrowed my coat.